Penny, Penny, Penny.
I'm ready.
Book smash.
But Arbiter friend?
Am I not the captain of this ship?
You're a wizard, Harry.
Shadow Claw Jutsu!
Misty Messenger.
And the Billboard Music Award goes to... BTS!
Winter is coming.
Hello, Larry.
Hey, how you doing?
Bye-bye!
Hello, 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 and welcome to Let's Talk Fandoms, a podcast where we talk about all things fandom. And today, I've got someone who I genuinely love calling a friend, not only because he's silly, but he gives me those conversations that make me think, wait, what? Let me introduce to you Mr. Nick Lanier.
Hello there. I'm definitely here.
Nick, I want to thank you for being on this podcast. Like I mentioned, I love talking with you, and I feel like the conversations we have are conversations that I go back to and think about. I'm just like, wait, what did we actually talk about?
Yeah, I get that a lot. Most people are confused once they finish talking with me.
Now, as we all know, I am not the best in remembering my first encounters with people, but do you remember the first time we met?
Yeah, very vividly. It was a events class back in college, and we had an assignment where we had to pick a partner and work with somebody. And, you know, it was my first semester there. I didn't know anybody, so I'm just sitting there quiet. I'm like, I'll just get the last person. But as soon as they said pick a partner, I had this girl right in front of me turn around, point at me, go, you, I'm working with you. You're my partner. Get over here. I'm like, okay. And then you found out I was nerdy, and now I'm joining a club. Whoops. So, yeah, not a bad way.
When Nick told me about this a few months back, I died, because not only does it sound so much like me, but I have no memory of this at all. And I love that he just remembers so vividly our first encounter.
Oh, and somebody like just immediately points you out of a class when you don't know anybody. Yeah, I tend to remember stuff like that. But it was all good in the end.
That is too great. How did you first get into fandoms? Or what were some fandoms that you first were introduced to?
Oh, wow, there's a lot. Well, I guess the main one obviously is the whole video game scene in general. If we're going to go by that. And I'm pretty sure that started when I was one of those too young to remember anything. And my father was playing on a NES, a Nintendo Entertainment System. And I was kind of just sitting in his lap, and he's just like, hey, here's a controller. And I didn't know what I was doing. I don't even remember it. I'm just clicking away. And then that just progresses into always watching the father play stuff, into I'm now sneaking on and playing when I should be in bed, to just playing all the time. So you kind of get hooked. You keep playing and playing and playing. Next thing you know more than your father does now.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah. I guess that's kind of how it got started on the whole video game trend anyways. So
nice.
I'd say that's like my main fandom though.
Okay, cool. How would you define the term fandom?
I think my nice term is just like a group of people who appreciate and are interested in a certain topic. My other definition is a bunch of nerds who are all interested in the same thing. I like that one more, though. So I guess that's, yeah. It's just basically it's a group of people who all like a certain broad topic, essentially. That's what I get at.
Yeah. So what is your relationship with video games? I know you touched on it a little bit about your kind of first interactions with video games, but is there anything more, or has your interaction with video games changed since your first introduction?
Very much so. My interaction with video games, it's just the thing I always did in my free time. I had a middle school, high school stunt where essentially that was my life. It was go to school, come back, game until you go to bed, repeat.
Oh.
But nowadays more it's just kind of thing I do after I've gotten all my work done. I just want to relax. Sometimes I play with friends. And yeah, mostly nowadays it's just kind of playing with friends or to relax. It's kind of been pretty good. It's what's actually got me a few friends in my life right now, actually. So it's, I guess it's a nice way to relax. That's the gist of it.
Were there any expectations that you had with video games when you, either when you first kind of started out in them or when you got more heavily into them?
When I first started in, there wasn't an expectation because it was this foreign thing and you're like, what is this thing, you know? Yeah. So you pick up a controller and your mind's just blown. You're like, whoa. And because like you're experiencing stories and you're just like, I didn't know this was a thing. I didn't know you could do this. Now, like present day, I guess expectation really lies with hoping there's a good story or hoping there's a mechanic or something new to get that attention. Part of the issue with seeing everything is nothing really wows you as much. Yeah. So I guess expectations is trying to recreate the young me on an N64 controller, getting his mind blown because, oh my God, they have shining lights on the screen now. It's like, whoa. So I just, something to get me excited, something to make me go, whoa, okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
So
I know that my first video game console was the GameCube.
Mm.
And my brother and I, we had one GameCube that was in our den. And, you know, that was where the only TV was. And we would play all the time. We would play, Nickelodeon would come out every so often with new games or like new bundles where you could get, you know, those tiny CDs and put them in. And they would have a whole host of different like cartoon games. We played that all the time. We would play 007 all the time. Granted, I was pretty terrible.
It's all good.
Still out here trying to beat my brother and shoot him as many times as I could.
That's all good. We all aren't the best to begin with, so.
Oh, no. What was the first console that you really got introduced to?
So, I know I mentioned earlier I kind of watched my father on an NES, but I don't really consider that my first one, really, because I didn't really do anything. I just kind of click. I would guess I would have to say it's the N64.
Okay.
That's the one I'd say was my main one. My grandparents had that and a bunch of games in like their basement, and we'd spend time with them all the time. And I just sat in front of the TV with that guy all the time. So I think that's where like my origin was with games.
Yeah.
Obviously evolved from there, but that would be my pick. So I think the N64 is my start.
I had a friend, we as a family would go to their house, and I was the only girl within the children. There was four of us all together, and the guys would be very interested in playing video games. And I think that was my real introduction into video games beyond like children's games, I guess. And granted, I was introduced to like 007, but it was always with my brother, whereas like the introduction to like real competitive video, like it was interesting because they were playing Overwatch, they were playing first person adventure type of games. And although it wasn't like overtly competitive between, you know, four people playing one game, it was very much like, oh, I got to this point and was able to compete, or, oh, I made it to this level. And where I was like, I was very comfortable with, still to this day, one of my favorite games is Monkey Balls. And you're like a little monkey in a ball and you're running around.
Super Monkey Ball. Monkey Ball was pretty great. I played that one on the Wii, where you actually had the motion controls. That was so much fun.
Oh, God. It was so amazing. And I still love it to this day, as well as like Super Smash Bros.
Oh, classic.
Classic. Loved it. Logged so many hours on it. But I don't think it was until like I got outside of like in our den playing with just my brother and I that I understood that like, oh, video games can be and are competitive.
They can be. Some are very competitive to the point of, you know, there's whole esports scene on it. And then some are, I just want to not think for 3 hours and just kind of do something silly, you know?
Yeah. What are some games that you are interested in now?
So I guess my current lineup, because it always switches, there's always switching. Current lineup, let me pull up my Steam library real quick. So I would have to say, all right, I'm going to run through them. So we got Dead by Daylight. We've got Destiny 2. I'm pretty big into League of Legends at the moment. Monster Hunter. I'm just playing because I've been playing two versions at the moment. Friends trying to get me to play more Rocket League, but it's kind of, it's not really my thing, but it's cool. Whole bunch more. I could go on and on, but I guess those are the ones I play a lot at the moment.
And what kind of a setup are you looking at? Do you play solely console? Or are you on a laptop? What is the type of setup that you usually or prefer to play with?
So I'm PC and I don't have a laptop. I've built my own computer. So it's like one of those big old towers and something like that. Dual monitors, keyboard, nice mouse pad with all that, the whole jazz. The standard idea you get when people say like gaming setup, you see the big old flashy light one. That minus the flashy lights. I don't have the flashy lights. I don't care for that. But yeah, definitely PC, and I have a tower because I can add more to it, and it lets me run more games at a better graphic setting and FPS and all that. And that's what matters.
I'm trying to think. The last few years, I've kind of moved away from typical console, and I think that was specifically because I was in boarding school and then in college, and it just wasn't something that I was really focusing on. But I always had my computer, always had my laptop, so I was definitely able to do a lot of computer games. And I think my first introduction to like computer type games was definitely through like websites. I was someone that was always on miniclip.com, loved it. I thought it was amazing. They had some really fun games that sometimes I still try to go back and play, but the whole website is weird now.
Oh, I get you. I think we all were on a mini clip or sneaking through school playing cool math games.
Yes.
All that fun jazz, you know?
So much in fun.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm learning. I swear it has math in the title of the browser name. Yeah, no, it's
exactly
fine.
Like it's fine. It's in school and playing math. It's fine. It's great.
It's not blocked by the browser, so it's got to be fine.
I know. I don't know if it would be considered as like a computer game, but growing up at home, we had one computer that was like in the nook area of our kitchen so that our mom could kind of monitor how much computer time we had. And a big game that she was fine with me playing was like those Jumpstart like education.
Oh my gosh.
Games.
I remember those. Oh, I love those things.
They were so cool. And I recently, there was a YouTuber named Mac Does It who did like reactions to those original Jumpstart games where it just wasn't working on his computer. I mean, at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great to watch because when he was actually able to load some of them, I think it was like the first and second, third grade that he was actually able to load, it just brought me back to those times sitting in the kitchen, you know, smelling my mom cook something, thinking I was playing games when you're actually learning. Oh, those were the coolest things. And I thought I was the coolest kid playing them.
I just typed it into on Google and I'm looking at some of these covers of like the CDs and I'm like, oh my Lord, I remember that. Oh my gosh.
Oh, they were so great.
That's a rabbit hole for later. Break off that for now.
So a big thing in the video game community is positives and negatives of video games. And not only their effects, but just like what are they doing for the world?
Mm-hmm.
Are there any like positive and or negatives that you've seen within the video game community or even just information that has come out?
Oh, there's nothing's perfect. So, I mean, getting the negative part of the way so we can end on a happier note. So obviously negativity, you've probably seen like general stuff in the news, people saying like, the more people play video games, they become like violent or it encourages bad behavior.
Right.
That's what you kind of see mainstream. To people that are actually like in the scene, you get a lot of like toxicity in games. So this could go anywhere from just being completely flamed, where people just spout insults and obscenities and words of which I can't even say at you.
Thank you.
Oh, I wasn't even talking about that. I'm talking about like a whole bunch of things. You go from just like verbal abuse like that to like getting private message. There's some games where you can like ping things on the map and it makes like a noise. People like rapidly ping it to annoy you.
Oh.
People can do things like try and intentionally mess your game up. So if you're playing like a team game, they'll just give up and make the enemy team, I guess, win or have an easier time. So if it's like a 5v5 game and one person's annoyed at you on your team, they are now making it into essentially a 4v6 game.
Oh, wow.
And then you get to the really serious, which doesn't happen all the time, but there's always cases. Do you know what swatting is?
I know how to swat a fly.
So swatting is a very horrible thing that's happened to some Twitch streamers. Essentially, there are some people that go very over the edge and will try to obtain people's IP addresses so they can figure out where they are. When they do that, they can do a variety of things, but one of them is they call in fake massive threats. And they'll literally... Yeah.
Yes.
There's been some clips of like a Twitch streamer, just middle live stream, his door gets kicked down and there's police. Granted, it's false and he let go and all that, but that's like, I guess, the extreme side of it. Like, it doesn't happen all the time, but it's happened a few times.
That's terrifying.
And the other things people can do with your IP address is they can try and DDoS you, which in short is they're attempting to basically flood your connection, which is a bunch of crap, to essentially cause you to have internet issues or just to lose internet.
Oh.
So... Again, those are on the extreme ends. That doesn't typically happen all the time. Mostly what you get is a bunch of name-calling and people throwing or having a horrible attitude. But...
I will say I have... Okay, so now that you've explained swatting, I remember hearing about it in high school, but I never... I'm trying to think of how to say this. I never... took it as a serious thing, because when people would tell me about it, they put it in the context, or for me, the notion that it was fake and that it was staged. And to, you know, young me, it was like, how are you getting the police and the SWAT team to play into it? It was very strange. Yeah. At the time, I didn't understand Twitch, and I didn't understand that it was like a live thing. I was still in the mindset of like, you record it, edit, upload it. Mm-hmm. So now, kind of like hearing it again from you, knowing what Twitch is, understanding like how a little bit better how the platform works, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Not only is it terrifying for the person that's recording, it's also terrifying for the family and the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Because SWAT team, that's just not, you just don't see them walking around your neighborhood. You don't see them, you know, in full gear walking around going to, you know, Starbucks or Subway or anything. And so to have to live in that and see that, it's something that I would imagine continues with you for a while.
Yeah. I mean, again, I do want to say that doesn't happen as frequently as people might make. That's like the extreme end of things. So I think there's like a handful of times, but it's still out there. I think a few other things, just a rapid fire, like a lot of what people do toxic wise, more on a higher end than just calling you names and such, but lesser end than swatting. Just people essentially trying to ruin your experience. That's essentially what it is.
Yeah.
So if like there's a Twitch streamer and he's playing an online game, people try and find them in game and do anything they can to like halt their progression or reset or just anything. But I mean, some people just can't accept losing. That's essentially what a lot of this is.
And like, that's so sad because personally, I don't like to play a lot of competitive games because I know myself and I know that I am a sore loser. Like, I am. It's just personality.
Nobody likes losing.
Right. But I just can't really wrap my head around being so sore of a loser to the point where you feel the need to hinder someone else's fun and enjoyment and ability to play a game. And I do think that online video games and, you know, live streaming is something that has heightened that level of, I don't want to say like aggression, but definitely heightened those levels of sore loser-isk.
Say like the accessibility to do something.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, it happens.
Yeah.
A lot of games that I play team-wise, I like to play support. That's typically the class I go for. So I'll have times where, I'll give League of Legends an example. For support, you're in one of the lanes, and your job is you're paired up with somebody else, and your job is to make sure they don't die, and they get really good. I've had some times where maybe I misstep, or the other player was just better.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't do my job effectively, and I will get completely flamed, I'll get called names, dude will just completely leave me, he'll blame everything on me, and I'm like, I'm just trying to do this, buddy. And it's just like, I'm just trying to play a game. But yeah. So, I mean, with a lot of the name calling and all that, that's why you hear a lot of times when any competitive mode for any game is mentioned, people are like, oh, it's pretty toxic, it's pretty salty. That's usually where it stems from.
Okay. Because
competitive usually has ranks. And besides the shiny title and little border for some games or whatever, you might get a little reward here or two in game. But just sometimes that like, oh, I'm insert rank here player, people just like that ego boost, and when they can't have it, then they get a little upset, you know?
Yeah.
But personally, I take it as anytime you lose, you can always learn from what you did. So.
Yeah. How do you, I guess in kind of this small topic, how do you think, and I guess like, how do you feel about the evolution of video games? Because I know for me, from my own education, the first video game that I know of was Pong.
Mm-hmm.
And was something that, and I don't want to belittle it, but it was something that was easy enough for everyone to play. It was something that, you know, you could master. It was fun. It was entertainment. It would take that time.
It's a simple game.
Right. Personally, for someone who is not super heavily engrossed in video games, I have found video games now to be almost this like entity that's slightly unattainable. I have a friend who really wants to talk with me on the podcast about World of Warcraft.
Oh boy.
I've heard about it. I've seen people play it. I think it looks interesting. It is something that I am terrified to start.
I will say there are some games very simple to the point of you're just going to run around and build.
Yeah.
And then there's some games that are so extensive. People have created Excel sheets and Word documents and all sorts of stuff just to figure things out. You'll probably, when you hear of like an online MMO game, you'll usually see those pictures and they have like 5 billion buttons on the middle of it.
Yes.
That's what people usually think because that's kind of what it looks like. And then you have to actually like do math. And then there's a lot of like planning. Like there's a whole term called build crafting where literally people sit down and plan out builds and like calculate stuff and do math and all that just to figure out what the most optimal, whatever it is. It can get very intense, but some people like that, like the build crafting of how can I make the most perfect build? I kind of like doing that a bit. Like, to me, that's enjoyable to like, okay, hold on. Let me get a piece of paper and write this all down so I can figure out what works here. Like, I enjoy that sometimes. But for some people, that's a nightmare and they don't want to think, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think Minecraft is great. I've watched a lot of gameplay of it, but I've never for myself sat and done it. And I think it's because Minecraft has become this very large game that a lot of people not only know of, but are playing and building these incredible, I don't even know if it'd be called an island, but definitely sections that are so monumentous that for me, when I think about starting it, it's just a little intimidating.
Yeah. I mean, Minecraft, I think, is a good example for like anywhere from a beginner or a pro to jump in. Because for Minecraft, if you don't know anything, you don't want to think too much, it's a simple game. You run around, you gather materials, and you build stuff. And then you have people that are crazy, and they make working computers that can access the web with blocks they placed. And then you have people that made live sculptures. In fact, I think there was a project where somebody is recreating a one-for-one scale of the world.
Oh, my.
So you can go nuts like that. Or you can be like, I made a dirt hut, and it has a little door on it now. It looks cool. Like, you can go as simple as that. And there's some times where I'm like, I need to make this cool thing. And then there's sometimes like, look, I put a name on this guy. Like, you can do all... Like, that's a good game. You don't have to get invested into it. You can just be like, this thing's silly and I like it, you know?
Yeah. What are some positives that you have seen come out of video games?
Okay, so there's... I like to think of the positive part here. So, so for positive-wise... I guess we'll start with like the simple stuff of you just have people are like, you have some people that are generally nice. Like I've had some people and I'm like, hey guys, sorry, I died there. I don't know what I'm doing. And they'll be like, no, you're good, man. They'll be fine. And then you even have so far the people like, hey, hold on, add me. Let me tell you a few things. Like I've been playing this game a while.
Aww.
And I've had some people literally like give me full coaching lessons. And I'm like, oh shoot. So you can have generally like nice people. There's sometimes where, like, if you play, like, an online game and you need help with something, there's some people that will go out of their way and help you complete a quest or an adventure or whatever to get you through it, even if they get nothing out of it. They just do it to help you. So you can go basic level like that. And then there is far on to, like, stuff like people do charity work.
Oh, wow.
There's a bunch of, like, live stream marathons that go on. And there's a whole bunch of them. But their whole goal is they'll do something, either just like playing a game to like speedrunning games to, hey, any donation you do here, we'll put towards this. And if you hit X goal, I'll do silly thing here. And people actually have raised money for charities
because
of gaming. Even so far, there's a company or two that'll be like, look, we have a brand new skin we're releasing on the store. But every single purchase, that money goes to this charity instead. So you can have some nice stuff like that. So people have done a lot. You can even, like, I've seen games use it to teach people things. Like, going back on Minecraft, there's actually an education edition where people actually put it in school and they learn stuff. So, like, I guess you can definitely, like, use games to teach people stuff and you can, like, use it to raise money. And, I mean, then there's a whole, like, people made friends. People made friends off of it. People made careers out of video games. Yeah. There's even some people who've met, like, their partner in life through games.
Aww.
I'm still hoping for that one, but it's worked for other people. There's definitely a lot of stories of, oh, we met online playing this game, and 4 years later, here we are. And you're like, wow.
Wow.
It's like, to think you would, you know, end up with somebody you met just by joining a random lobby one day. It's amazing, you know? So,
on the charity front, when you had mentioned this to me a few months back, I started doing like a little bit of like research and looking into it. And one that I found that I have now heavily started participating in, I think they've stopped for maybe the last 2 months. They haven't done anything, but it is, as we know, I am a big RuPaul's Drag Race fan. And I love the idea that you can use your recognition as a platform for, you know, doing something good for the world. And one of my favorite drag queens, Trixie Mattel, she was doing every month, like live streams on Twitch, and she was doing through the game of Sims, and she was creating like almost like a play for play like episode of one of the like Drag Race episodes. And so every time she would reach a specific goal, she would add a new like Sims character that was a character of the show. And it was mm-hmm. really cool. And I think that's great. Just the ability to kind of keep that going, keep that recognition, as well as like, it's something that I already know I enjoy, something that I already know I would have fun doing. And she is just such a funny, such an outspoken person that finding something that you can get back behind that's also raising money and awareness mm-hmm. is wonderful. And I love that this can be a part of the video game community.
So I can't say I've heard of any of that, but there's definitely a lot of similar cases of that nature, and they're always pretty fun. You'll definitely have people who are like, why are you on Twitch? And then you're like, oh, shoot, it's a charity.
Yeah.
I think my big example, which I actually pulled up all the numbers on the side this time.
Oh, look at you.
So the charity I like following, or the big old group, is called Games Done Quick. They are, well, they're being doing a little bit more now that they're all online, but it's essentially a biannual speedrunning marathon. So it's a week-long marathon that they stream, and it's just speedrunning games back to back to back. And they always, they always just any donations they get, they put straight towards charity. So they've been running since 2010, it looks like, on my Wikipedia page I pulled up on the screen. And they have a, what is it? They have like a winter one, which is usually January. And then they have a summer one, which is usually July. So it's a lot of fun, and the games always switch up. There's always different runners, and people can, in the speedrunning community, can just like submit, like an application, I guess, to try and be with the one to join in. And it's a lot of fun because you get to see a whole bunch of different games just absolutely broken apart and just run as quick as possible. If we want to jump numbers-wise, so it looks like, according to the Wikipedia page, the first one they had, which was back in 2010, they only raised, like, what, $10,000?
Okay.
But the most recent winter one, they raised $3.1 million.
Oh, my God.
And for the summer one, their first one was 2011, where they raised $21,397. But their most recent summer one, they raised
$2.3.
Typically, it looks like their charities of choice are either the Prevent Cancer Foundation for winter and Doctors Without Borders in summer. But, yeah, they just raise that money, and they just, here you go.
That's wonderful. I love that.
It's a very fun experience. Luckily, they put all their videos segmented on their YouTube channel. So when you miss it because you're working, I get to watch it later anyways.
Yeah.
In fact, it's kind of what got me into doing speedrunning anyways. So because you look at it, you're like, hey, that's really cool. I want to do that.
They're just kind of going on this positivity thing. There was a 4-year-old boy named Ben Duskin. I think that's his name, Duskin. Yeah. Who with his Make-A-Wish Foundation wish created a video game that would help kids like beat leukemia in the game. Mm-hmm. He wasn't helping them beat leukemia in real life.
That'd be really cool, but
that would be amazing. But yeah, like as a 4-year-old, I think it was like between ages like 4 and 5, he, with the help of his parents and video game designers, was able to create this game, and it is called Ben's Game. And mm-hmm. the entire purpose of the game is you are Ben, and you're running around, and you're fighting leukemia through, you know, killing blood cells, you know, replenishing different cells. And you can still find this game now. And I think it was put out around the 2000s, very early 2000s. We talked a little bit about consoles, a little bit about fandoms. What kind of representation have you seen of video games in movies or books or television shows.
So I'm not counting like the whole, oh wow, look, I saw a console in the show in the background. Like, that's whatever.
Yeah.
But there's definitely stuff like, there's some shows that get like an adaptation. There's movie video game shows.
Yeah.
I think one of the big ones that came out recently that absolutely loved, The Witcher, which is a good, well, technically it's a book series too, but it's a video game series that's pretty good. Got a Netflix adaptation, and it was fantastic, by the way. But then you see stuff like, well, I think it was more of a trend earlier, not so much nowadays, but a lot of movies get like a video game adaptation right with the movie. The one that pops to mind is the Lord of the Rings series.
Yeah.
They typically got a lot of like video game counterparts to play with along with them. There's some video games that now have movies and shows out there. In fact, a lot of them do that. Like when you think of Pokemon, like that was a game to start with, but now there's a whole show that runs. And
yeah,
like now it's which one are you talking about when you bring up that. So I think that's like the big thing. Like you see a lot of just like shows and such with a lot of video games. Definitely see a lot of that.
I'm really glad you brought up Pokemon, because growing up, I think like third, fourth grade, I collected Pokemon cards so hard.
Oh, God.
So hard. I had a full, thick binder full of Pokemon cards with the individual sleeves. I cherished them.
Oh, boy. Same. I had a really big binder, and I got the bigger binder because it got too full.
Oh!
Recently, I was good and trimmed my collection down to just keeping my favorites and getting rid of the rest. But oh boy,
yeah.
Pokemon card collecting. I didn't even play the game. They just looked shiny, and I wanted them.
Exactly. That's how I was. Other kids had them. I thought they looked really cool. I begged my mom to buy me packs every time we went to the store.
Oh, yeah.
I never played the game. I had never seen the show at that point.
It's just so the appeal of opening the card pouch.
Yes. Yes. I didn't know how to play the game with the cards. I knew nothing. All I knew was that these cards looked amazing.
Something to blow your mind, because you probably don't know. There is a lot of channels out that will now do just card box, card pack unboxings. And their whole goal is to find these very rare and elusive Pokemon cards that are worth a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
If I remember correctly, I think my buddy told me there's a card that was either $400 or $800 just for a card. So some people will literally open packs to try and obtain these rare cards. It's insane. There's a whole like community on just Jesus card pack Christ. Openings. It's insane.
It's like the golden ticket.
Oh, yeah.
Pokemon. But then I remember when I was graduating from fifth grade, I gave my entire pack. It was either fifth grade or like right before like going into high school, somewhere in between there, that I gave my whole binder to one of my friends, because I was like, I don't do anything with them. Mm-hmm. They're just sitting here. And now I wish I had kept the frickin' binder.
Oh, okay. So I just pulled something up. I just pulled up a site that literally looks like the stock market. And it literally has falling cards, raising cards. It shows their price, their shift in price. It looks just like the stock market.
Oh, my God.
They have a top 100. And there is a card that literally, it says lowest priced is going for $3,002.07.
Jesus Christ.
I'm not. Now, granted, it's clearly very rare.
Yeah.
But still, so people, it's basically a whole trading community just to get these damn cards.
Oh, you know? My God. That's crazy. It's like, do you remember Beanie Babies?
Oh, not those things.
No, they're great.
Probably different from your experience. You probably collected them because they look cute. I used them to pelt my brothers with as they pelted me back because they were full of beans. They were more like weapons for me, but that's what happens when you have two brothers.
Oh, my God. So I never collected them, but I had three.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved them, and I thought they were great. I don't know what the heck happened to them. I mean, granted, we've bounced around so many times. Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, very similar to Pokemon cards, there are certain rare Beanie Babies that go for thousands of dollars. Oh,
yeah. It's just the, oh, this is the only one. And once you can say that, it's like, phew, there goes the price.
Yep. Oh, God. Collectibles.
It's all about having the bragging rights of, I have one of the only few insert number here in the world. So.
It makes me think of that Kim Possible episode with the little, oh, I don't even remember what they're called, but it's, you know, Pandaroo, and they only made 10. I'm like, oh, God. Oh,
there is a lot of that stuff.
So what are some other, I know that a fictional console that I hear a lot about, because I watch a lot of South Park, is the Okama GameSphere. And I've learned that GameSphere is a very popular, like, fake console to just use in your movies or shows.
Oh, boy. Well, the only one I'm really aware of is the GameSphere from Drake and Josh. So yeah. A lot of these on this whole list here, I'm like, I've never heard of these. So hold on, let me just do a right-click and search on Google. Let me see what this looks like real quick. Oh. So on this Okama GameSphere. Oh, boy.
Yeah. That's,
what is that? That looks so weird.
Exactly. The Okama GameSphere from South Park.
What?
Looks intense.
It looks like a snow globe on top of a Xbox.
But even the GameSphere from Drake and Josh, when Josh plugs it in, and it lights up and it glows, and it's, I mean, that's an intense game experience.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, the actual reason, like, I don't think they can reference any of the actual consoles, because it's like, oh, there's issues with that. But you can kind of make fun of it. Like, we had the GameCube, so, well, okay, I need to throw a console in, but I can't say GameCube. It's a GameSphere, aha.
Well, there is an episode of South Park where, like, the neighborhood and, like, all the kids are split up into two groups, and they're arguing about whether or not their sole console is going to be the new PS, you know, console, or is it going to be the new Xbox console? And they continuously reference those two to the point where, you know, it's Black Friday and they're trying to figure out, you know, how to get the best deal on which console that they want. And then it gets to the point in that episode where the heads of each of the consoles are trying to get these kids to, like, choose the fate of whichever one of the consoles.
Oh, boy. I haven't seen that.
And I will say that is the first instance of, like, an actual real console being so heavily stated in a game or in a show.
I mean, I'm just looking at the thing. There's literally one here listed as the Super Pretendo. Like, come on. That's literally pretending Nintendo. Let's be real.
Yes.
I mean, I love it. Don't get me wrong. It's just like, hee-hee.
It's so great. And then there's the Pretendo from the Muppet Babies, which is so great.
That's just... That's a clever one. It's like, haha, it's not a Nintendo system. It's a Pretendo. Because we're pretending. Yeah. Clever little wording. Oh, boy. Well, I guess if we're going video game-wise, speedrunning is a big community I'm very interested in.
What is speedrunning?
So speedrunning, in the easiest way of explaining, is beating the game as quickly as you possibly can. So... in speedrunning, it's just a bunch of people a speedrunning community is just a bunch of people that will run a certain game and compete for who can get the fastest time.
Oh.
So it's like a little competition. So you'll see a lot of it on Twitch, and the marathon I mentioned earlier is the same concept. And I just find it absolutely fascinating because you can get something as simple as really good movement. Like, oh, I can optimize my time here by, instead of getting all the chests here, walking over here, if I just go into this specific pattern, I can get this level done as quick as possible. And that can also go to, like, oh, I know all the spawns of the enemies come in. I know the objectives. I know the puzzles on hand. Mm-hmm. And then you can get to wacky stuff like, well, I looked into the game's code and I realized that it kind of freaks out when you do this thing. So if you do this thing, it actually freaks out and thinks I'm over here, which means I can complete the level quicker.
Oh my.
And then you get really nutty. Like, there's a recent video I watched of a Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time run. Uh-huh. And the current world record, which I'm going to pull up, which it's absolutely insane. So hold on. So I watched this video and it's nuts. So the category is any percent, which any percent literally just means any means possible, get to the end. Obviously no cheating, but right. Any means possible, get to the end. So it's any percent. And the current world record is 7 minutes and 13 seconds.
Oh, wow.
And the way they do it is they just literally go into the starting area. They kind of walk around and they hit a trigger or two, and they confuse the game so hard, it throws it right to the end credit screen after you beat the final boss. It's insane.
What?
Then there's all sorts. So I guess let me run through. So the categories. So every game has its own like categories that can run, but the mm-hmm. most common ones you can usually see are like the any percent, just get to the end.
Right.
There's 100%, which is usually defined per game, but it's essentially you get all the collectibles you can.
Yeah.
Then there is sometimes people want to do glitchless, where you can't use any glitches. So it's just a pure skill. Just how good are you at the game?
Yeah.
And then every game has their own things. Like maybe it has like a subcategory, or maybe it has a different ending. And that's per game basis. But the general concept of speedrunning is just get to the end. And it's like a race. There's even some games that people will race, and they'll put live streams up and it's two people side by side, and it'll be a who can beat the game faster.
Yep.
So speedrunning is nutty and I love it. I've done a few myself actually, so it's a lot of fun. Because when you play the game originally, which if you're going to do this, recommend you do it, you have a sense of how many hours you devoted into the game. Because you walk around, you look through everything. Oh, let me explore everything. And then you watch a speed run, and you're like, I'm sorry, you beat it how quickly?
Yeah.
You know how long that took me? So I guess, for instance, for me, so the game I like to run is Silent Hill 2.
Okay.
So when I originally played the game, I took my time, I walked around, I read everything, got the items, maybe died once or twice. And it took me like, you know, a couple hours, played with the buddy, like a good chunk of hours. I'm just going to rough estimate maybe 20 hours total. So my current record time for one of the endings is 40 minutes and 58 seconds.
Oh, nice.
So when you think this game took me about 20 hours to beat, and then I'm here beating it in under an hour, you're like, what?
That's amazing.
How is that possible? Okay. So it's just, it's interesting. And then you definitely learn a lot about like the mechanics of games too.
Yeah.
So I've learned stuff from games like, oh, I didn't know you could do this. Like going back to Ocarina of Time, it's a very basic attacking game. You press the button, you swing your sword. But apparently if you swing your sword, that does like one damage. If you do like a jumping attack, it does say like three. But then if you crouch with your shield and then you stab with your sword, that apparently does whatever your last hit was.
Oh.
And I never knew that until I watched speedrunning. And then I see this guy crouch and stab this guy three times and he's done. And then I do it and I'm like, why didn't that work? So you learn stuff that you can just use in a regular run.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing, but I think speedrunning is very intriguing and it's absolutely fascinating.
Interesting. I wonder if, back in high school, I was spending a lot of time on YouTube, just like watching gameplays. And mm-hmm. I would always find games that were moving very quickly. And so now you explaining this, I'm just like, oh, that's definitely what it was.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
and a lot of it was like Super Smash Bros. Or like Portal. And for me, I was very much like, no, I want to see like through the game. I want to know like what's going on. And the fact that it was so fast, I mean, although it was intriguing, it was very much like, okay, if I try this, maybe I can do that. Maybe it'll work. And then I'm actually able to get to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, no, it's pretty cool. It's definitely, it's just, I think a lot of the wow factor that people usually get with the whole like marathon I mentioned, or just watching anybody in general, is like I said, you play a game for how many hours and then you watch somebody destroy it in like minutes and you're like,
yeah.
What? So to blow your mind, your Carmen Sandiego game.
I'm
pulling up so I can't tell which one, but I'm going to pull up the deluxe edition, which I'm assuming is probably the base.
Yeah.
So it's a single capture. So I never really played the game. I'm assuming that's like you get to the end.
Yeah.
The current world record is 1:09.
How?
So the fun part, and what? I can send you all this. So the place I go for the record for all these leaderboards is speedrun.com.
Oh, okay. And
they each game has its own moderated section with guides, resources, rules, yada, yada. But it has everybody's times listed, what they did. But the big thing is, to submit any run, you have to submit a video, and it has to get approved.
Oh.
So any of these runs, you can just click on the video link right next to it, and you can watch somebody do this. So for you later, you can watch this guy beat your game in a minute.
I would cry.
So I just think it's a really, really neat thing.
Oh, wow.
It's a fun concept to see a beloved game just get finished in no time at all.
Someone completed the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater game in under... in under a minute. Yeah. What the that game literally takes me days.
So basically anything can be speedrun. Typically what people like doing, though, to make it even for most people, is they usually run on a specific version or a game that doesn't get updated anymore or something like that.
Okay.
So so everybody's at like an even playing field.
Okay.
That's typically also why people don't allow like things like emulators or anything of that nature. There's some games that make it so load screens don't count towards your time, because like maybe my computer, I have no load screens because it runs quick, but somebody who's running a potato has like a 5-minute load screen, you know?
Potato.
So it tries to put everybody on like a even playing ground.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah, no, speedrun, it's insane. But any game can usually be speedrun. Hell, like Minecraft can be run, games.
Yeah.
And then there's what I deem the meme speedruns, where there's some silly categories. So the one I can think of off the top of my head is, I think it's SpongeBob for Bikini Bottom. There is a category where your whole objective is to get to the first bathroom in the game.
Oh.
And it's just... Yeah, and it sounds silly, but then people will do these glitches to try and skip entire segments of a level just so they can get this character to the objective.
It's goodness. Silly.
It's absolutely nuts. So, and it's a whole rabbit hole, so like when you go on the website, just type anything, and it's probably there. And it's insane. It's absolutely insane what some people can do out there, you know?
Man, I got to get off this website. Now I'm just looking stuff up.
It's addicting, ain't it?
It really is. This is so cool. It also tells you, like, what country.
Yeah, that's something you can do. You can put a little flag next to your name.
Yeah.
And you can actually click on any of the runners' pages, and it can tell you whatever runs they have there and their links and all that. Like, I have my own there, but I only have...
You do?
Yeah, I only have the one game I play. I only have the one, and I've kind of taken a slight break from speedrunning, but I intend to definitely go back and try more categories. Funny enough, the only way I started with this, so I've always kind of like watched live streams of speedrunning, and I went, mm-hmm. wow, that's really cool. But this game, Silent Hill 2, I played with a friend once. And for Silent Hill, Silent Hill games usually have a regular run, and then they have new game runs. So for Silent Hill 2, there's actually 3 endings you cannot obtain unless you're on a New Game Plus run. New Game Plus run just basically means you've beaten the game once before. So when I was going to play with a friend of mine, I don't own the game, so I got an emulator.
Right.
But I couldn't get those funny endings because I never beat the game before. So I'm like, okay. Oh. And I looked up like a guide on, like, I think I typed, what's the bare minimum I need to finish this game? And I played the game just running that guide, and I ran past everything I didn't have to, picked up whatever was necessary, and I just did it as quick as I could, not even thinking about it. And it wasn't impressive. It took me like 2 hours. But then there was just something about, I'm like, I just beat this game in like 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it just felt really cool. And then on that live stream that came up, I was talking about, for the charity live stream came up. Mm-hmm. And then I saw this guy run the same game. And then I'm like, okay, hold on. I know I can do better. I can get a faster time. And then next thing you know, I'm now live streaming the game going quick. And now I've beaten the game in less than 41 minutes. And it's so fun seeing you hit your timer at the end and seeing it light up. And it's like, you got a new time. And you're like, it just it so feels cool. Good. It just feels so good knowing you did better.
If there are any speed runs that you guys want to show us or even show Nick, definitely let us know. Get in contact with us. We would love to see your speed runs.
Oh, please send me speed runs. I'll watch them all day. So many good ones.
They are very cool. Because now I really want to look up some of the games that I play and just see what are people doing to get them done. Because I know... Mm-hmm. I know with Portal, when I was introduced to Portal, it took me a few days to, get the hang of it, figure it out, get it done. And granted, I've never tried to do a speed run, but I've definitely been able to complete the game. But I would love to see how fast others
Portal,
can do.
As I pulled it up, Portal is a bit nutty. I've seen that run.
Yeah.
So they have a out of bounds category. Inbounds, glitchless, and then inbounds with no, I don't know what that is. So the out of bounds, so basically I guess this is your any percent. Mm-hmm. Time without loads, because they have a time with and without. So time without loads is 6 minutes, 26 seconds.
Oh my God.
For the whole game.
Jesus Christ.
And then if you want to go inbounds, it only takes them 9 minutes and 52 seconds.
Gracious.
Granted, this is world record time.
Yeah.
So, and then just watching those, it's like they never stop moving. That's the big thing when you see some of these. It's like they don't stop moving at all. And you're like, how do you keep up with it?
Yeah.
And from being in mine, which isn't as fast-paced as that, thank God, but you don't get to stop moving. Like, as I'm running down the street, I have to think constantly like, all right, there's enemy A, B, and C down this road. I need to take this certain path so I don't run into them. Okay, well, I need to turn the corner here. And if I run into the corner there, I'm going to stop and I'm going to lose my running momentum. But I need to flick the joystick at a certain angle so I keep my momentum, but then quickly turn the corner. And then, you have to constantly be thinking about that stuff. And that's just basic stuff. That's not even the puzzles or remembering which rooms you have to go into. That's just basic walking. And then there's other things like for my game, you have the more you run, your guy gets tired. However, if you click on any text and you hit the quick save button, it makes that text not go away. And for some reason, this game makes it that if there's any text on game, the game thinks that it needs to refill your stamina. So what it ends up being is I have a long strip of land I need to run, but I need to mash the quick save button. So there's a solid 5 minutes of me clicking quick save over and over and over, so I get top speed, so I have maximum speed. And it's simple stuff like that. And then you have to combine simple stuff like that with remembering, okay, I need to go to this room and get this key, and then I need to go to this room and then do this puzzle, all while on top of trying to remember, okay, that's right, basic movement, don't hit the enemy, watch your health. And it gets nutty. You're thinking about it a lot of time. And depending on your run, that could be intensive. Like, mine's a 40-ish minute run. So that means for 40 minutes, I have to, focus.
Yeah.
So.
I'm sorry. I'm still looking up bullshit. And I just looked up a bunch of the different Nancy Drew video games that I personally have not played, but I was just recording with Grace a few days ago, and she was telling me that she had played the Nancy Drew games, and it would take her, you know, her and her sister a few days or even weeks to get through them. And someone completed one of the games that she plays a lot, in under, I think it was under 14 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
And that right there is what I told you why speedrunning is cool. Because you know these games you've played, and then you've seen somebody just destroy it in no time at all. And you're like, how is that possible?
Insane.
My favorite part is when the few games my father's played nowadays, and I tell him, and he goes, how? How did you do that? I'll even show him a video. Like, the one game he played, this person performed a glitch where they basically climbed something, but then kind of made their character freak out and fall, but then not, and it was a weird glitch, but essentially unloaded all the character enemies, and they could just complete the level.
Oh.
And this is on the hardest max difficulty. So when I showed my father, and he's like, do you know how many times it took me to do that room? And they just walk through it.
Oh!
And it's just, it's so much fun. So the main appeal, like I said, is just seeing games you love, and you're like, they did that in how long?
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Oh my God.
And then I guess we're going to go back community wise. Each game has its own community here. The Silent Hill game, I am in a Discord server for the Silent Hill games. So they have all the games as one, but there's a whole community based on just the Silent Hill games being speedrun. For Zelda, there's like a Zelda speedrun group. But then there's also like a randomized Zelda speedrunning group. And then like basically every game has like its own little community. And everybody talks to each other and they like, hey, hold on, I tried doing this here and I got a little faster. Anybody want to try that? I'm like, yeah, sure.
Oh, wow. And people,
it's a whole group of people just trying to break the game. I mean, I was talking with some people and this one person went into like a map viewer just to see the level layout and saying, hey, can I somehow wedge my character into the wall here, go out of bounds and walk in bounds over here to just skip the level? And then everybody's like, hold on, let me try this. And then you just have a whole group of people doing anything they can to break this video game, to go faster.
Oh my God.
And it's nutty. And from what I've seen, people are generally very, very friendly. They're very, very cool about it. All the time I'll see people, like, they'll lose their record or something. And instead of being like, oh, how dare you, you stole my world record, they'll be like, damn, nice dude. I was trying to get that, but it looks like you got it. And then they'll just cheer each other on and be like, well, I'm going to get you next time, though. I think you can go faster. And then it becomes a whole friendly competition thing.
Oh, my gosh. So I'm looking on Netflix really quick because there is an episode of Black Mirror that talks about a guy that gets almost, I don't want to say transported because he's not, but there is like a microchip that gets kind of almost implanted into his brain.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire like 40-minute episode for him is like a second in the video game.
Oh, is this the one where he went in the house and he thought it was like haunted and everything he perceived? And he like prayed off his fears or something?
Yes, yes.
Oh, that one is... I haven't seen all the Black Mirror, but I've seen that one, and I couldn't sleep for like 2 nights after.
Yes, it messed me up. It is. It's
nutty.
So intense. So it's on Netflix, Black Mirror, Season 3. The episode is called Playtest.
Oh, God, that is...
And it's terrifying.
Yes, it is.
Oh my God.
And there goes my sleep for the night.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh no, you're good. It's intriguing, don't get me wrong, but then it, like, that touches on the whole like augmented reality scene, which is that's a whole thing right there.
Granted, I think everyone knew it was coming eventually, right? It's going to be something of the future. Now it's here. I think the fact that media is able to show us the dangers of what it could be is so real now.
And I think they definitely show us a possibility. I mean, anything could happen. Yeah. Like, you could have that, but then you could just have, like, nah, it's all good. But I definitely think if you put any sort of, like, he puts, like, a chip in the back of his head, I think.
Yeah.
Like, my first thought is, how long until somebody hacks it?
You know? Exactly.
Like, anything that's mechanical like that can be hacked. So it's only a matter of time until somebody's like, all right, well, my vision's gone because this guy hacked the chip in my brain. Whoops.
Yeah. Yeah, it's terrifying. And mm-hmm. I think the scariest part, or the scariest few parts of that episode is, as a watcher of the episode, you, along with the guy, think that it's going to end, or that it is the end, or, you mm-hmm. know, that we are out of the game. And it's very much, to me at least, it very much showed that blurring the lines between facts and then augmented reality mm-hmm. can become so frightening and so dangerous and so real.
There's even times just like, and now with like playing too much. So mm-hmm. my two things here, that's either you play a game for so long, the same game for hours and hours and hours, and then you finally get up and it feels like you're in a different world now. You're like, oh, I'm back in the real world now. And you have like this weird spacey feeling like, okay, that's right. I'm like, you felt like you were in the game you're playing for so uh-huh. long. And then you step away and you're like, that's right, there's a whole world out there. This is real life. And something that like doesn't help with that more is virtual reality. So you put on a whole headset and you just feel like you're there. And then you take off your helmet and you're like, whoa, okay, where am I now?
Mm-hmm.
And it's very immersive to the point where it's almost like this is real. This is what it is. And it takes you a second.
Yeah.
So,
so there was an episode of Kim Possible that aired in 2003, and it's called Virturon, spelled Vir-Tu-Ron. Mm-hmm. And it's basically about how Ron and another character get trapped in this like virtual reality type of a game. And it's once again, it is just, although it is an animated show, young me was very terrified.
Oh, yeah.
And the idea that in the future, you know, people can strap on devices that then mentally and visually and just auditorily just able to put you into that mindset and really almost be disconnected from the rest of the world is very similar to what you were mentioning, how getting out of it is very almost jarring to the senses.
There's all sorts of I guess media that does that. I mean, the one big anime everybody talks about with such like that is Sword Art Online.
Mm-hmm.
The whole premise is they put on a big goggle and their whole subconscious gets sent into the video game and it's essentially like real life. And the whole premise is somebody kind of hacks it, keeps them trapped in there. And if you try to move the helmet, he'll just short circuit it and explode right on you.
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting concept. But then like when you think of not the scary part of it, the fact that you can just fully submerge yourself into this brand new area, and it's insane. Like if that was the real thing and there was no negatives to it, that means instead of going to sleep, your body would get all the rest you need, but you could still just interact in another world. And it's insane.
Yeah.
Especially help with people like maybe you can't walk ever again. Well, now you can go in this virtual thing and look, you're good now. You're fine.
Yeah.
That's the cool part of it that would be interesting if it was a thing.
Yeah, I definitely think media, specifically with like shows and movies, and I've seen it a lot in anime, and I think it is bleeding more into non-anime-esque genres that are showing a lot of this augmented reality and mm-hmm. the positives as well as the negatives, which I think is very smart for us to be aware of and for movie and show directors and makers to be explaining and to be showing kind of the differences between augmented versus reality, which is very interesting. And I like that it's being shown a lot more.
Yeah, it's a definitely a very interesting topic. And it's one of those possible future technologies we might get. I mean, people have definitely been working on it, but it's not here, but it's very much a very good possibility. So I think people like to go a little crazy imagining and be like, oh, this could definitely happen, this could be a thing, and they might be right, but I don't know. Some parts of it I think is really cool, and I'd be like, oh, hell yeah, bring it on. But then there's some parts I'm like, no, nah, I'm good here.
Maybe
like,
not.
Real life is kind of but I don't know. That's why I think it'd be cool to be like fully immersed into a game, because that's like a one way to really get into it.
But
yeah, there's always negatives to it. There's nothing's perfect.
I'm trying to think. Years ago, I saw Tron.
Oh, Tron. Yeah.
And that, again, is very, like, getting immersed into the game. And even then, I think very similar to... Oh, why can't I think of it? God freaking darn it. Once again, Black Mirror... amazing, amazing, amazing show. In season 5, which is their newest season, they released an episode called Striking Viper. And that, again, are these two men that knew each other, you know, from like college, maybe even earlier, who like 10 years later reconnect through video games. And they're able to play the just such cherished video game of Mortal Kombat. And they get to choose these characters. And so when they go into the video game, they physically look like these characters. But it's still their mental aspect talking to each other. But they're able to feel things, really bleed and interact with each other. And very similar to Tron, when you're in the game, the guy is able to notice and understand that there are other people from his real world that are in there. And I don't know, I love the idea of that. And I love the idea of just like keeping your real senses, although they're still in tune with the games, you still have all of the information that you know from the outside world.
Yeah.
So you have a Twitch, and you're pretty active on your Twitch.
I've taken a little step back to work on life stuff, but yes. Back in college, I was streaming, actually, when we were hanging out, I was streaming myself, and I got the affiliate status back then, but then I took a big old break to finish college, and recently at the speedrunning stuff, when I started running the one game, I got really into it, and I would do it like 3-4 times a week.
Oh, wow.
Recently, I've kind of taken a step back, because I'm focusing on a thing or two, but it's more of a hobby thing, so when I have free time, I love live streaming and just being silly on there. But obviously life comes first, so
And
focus on stuff, I take a step back. But yes, I do stream on Twitch from here and then.
I always find it very interesting when there's a new platform that comes out and then how quickly it evolves. I mean, for me, I personally think of MySpace and how just quickly Facebook came in and evolved. And then from Facebook came a bunch of different social media platforms, and then YouTube came in, and now I definitely think that Twitch, granted it is a live stream server, it definitely sounds a lot like it's, and I don't want to say it's taking over, but it's definitely taking some of the heat away from YouTube and on to them. Very cool. Yeah. So you have the Nintendo Switch.
Yes. Besides my PC, I like to jump around on the Switch. It's a cute little thing.
Yeah. And I remember, I vaguely remember when you got it, I think.
Yeah, I got it on launch. I could not wait to play the new Zelda game. I had to play it right away. So I actually went to the Walmart near our school and camped out in line to get the, to be one of the first people to get it. When was that? I don't even know how long ago that was anymore. Hold on.
It had to have been my junior year, which was 2016, 2017.
Oh, boy. It came out March 3rd, 2017.
Okay, yeah.
So, like, 3 years ago. Oh, boy.
I remember once you had it, it was always with you.
Yeah, the Switch is honestly amazing. It's one of the newer consoles that is, it's good, because the big thing with console when you think of is it's at home. That's all you got to do.
Yeah.
But the Switch just kind of goes, nah, and just, it has the ability to go mobile now. So you have a home console that you can then just decide to yoink out of the console part and take with you. And that's never been done before. Like, you've never been able just to pick up your PlayStation and go. Like, you can't do that.
But, very true.
But, like, with this one, I can be playing my console game. And, oh, well, we got to go. Okay, I'm going to pause. I'm going to pull it out of the console's base. And now it's like a DS. Yeah. So the Switch is amazing. It allows you to do it. It combines that gap that we've never had of home console and portable console. And it just kind of says, I'm going to do both.
Yeah.
Which is, that's the part right there why it's amazing. And it's got a good lineup too. And it's run really well. So that's why the Switch is just amazing.
I remember when you got it, I thought it was so cool because the only handheld, you know, quote unquote video game, I wouldn't even consider it a console. Well, potentially, was the Game Boy Color.
It's a console.
Yeah.
Early console, but.
And I got it as a hand-me-down from one of my cousins.
Yeah.
And I loved that thing.
Oh, I still have mine.
Oh my God, I would play it all the time. I would take it to school with me. I had all the different little cartridges.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was so cool. And then when you had yours, I remember seeing it. It was very large. It had buttons that were also on like a PS4 controller. Mm-hmm. It was very, very cool. And yeah, I thought it was amazing just seeing almost a larger handheld console that could be used almost like a more advanced, granted it was a more advanced Game Boy Color.
Yeah. It's amazing because when you think console game, you think the console games usually the bigger, cooler, shinier games.
Right.
The mobile console games are not as shiny because their graphics have to be dulled down so they can be mobile. So when you have this console that you're like, oh, I can play the big boy games and then just kind of take it with me wherein I want, it just blows your mind. Like, that shouldn't be a thing, but then you can. And that's why it's so cool.
Yeah.
So it's a mobile console, which is like, whoa, okay, hi.
Yeah.
And the transition is seamless too. Like, literally, it's just you pick it up out of the base and there. No wait time. You go.
That's amazing. Something that I always find really funny, I guess not really funny, but something that always stuck with me in college, freshman year, I took a introduction to communication through video games class.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved the idea of communication and video games and how it works together. And a big thing that we talked about in that class was the Fairchild Channel 4, which came out in 1976. And that was what really introduced the swapping capability of different cartridges for games. And these still were consoles that were in the home, but the ability to swap games really wasn't accessible to handheld consoles until the Game Boy. Which, me just being a nerd, thought that was a very cool fact and amazing because I had a Game Boy. I knew about the Fairchild Channel 4 specifically because I had family members that knew it. It was very, very cool. Just a little history lesson for all of you.
Yep, I didn't know this either. I'm like, you're like the history of all, and I'm like, this will be an adventure for both of us. Go for it. I mean, I know rough stuff, but I don't know, like, who made this. I'm like, I don't know. It just exists. I play very the game.
Yeah. You had mentioned before that you had built your own computer.
Oh, yeah.
How long did it take you to build your own computer?
So it can actually take as long as you think. Most of the time took into buying parts and planning it. Because you can't just buy parts and it's going to fit. You have to look at it and see, will this even connect? Because not everything plugs into each other. Personally, putting it together wasn't my first time putting a computer together. Mm-hmm. So I know, like, okay, this goes here, this goes here, and we're cool. And it's not as hard as you think. It's mostly just, cool, plug it in there, maybe screw it down, and then put cord here, cool. Most of it's just in the planning and prep and buying. That's what it really is. But yeah. I made my PC, I want to say about 5 years ago at this point.
Oh.
And it's a beast. It can run everything highest settings. In fact, I always taunt my friends that I'm like, oh, well, hold on. Let me just make sure I'm on the ultra graphics real quick. And I like it because the PC is good because you can run like everything. And a lot of stuff is PC nowadays. And the neat thing about my PC is, unlike a console, I don't have to buy a new console every X amount of years. My PC was 5 years ago, and it's still good. It still runs everything that comes out now.
Oh, wow.
And if it didn't, or I didn't like something, I could just change it real quick. So okay. Recently I ran out of room, just literally just room on my computer to do stuff. So I just bought more storage, plugged it into my computer, and nope, there's a whole brand new drive with a whole terabyte of storage, and now I can put more games on. Like, that's it. I didn't have to buy a new console, new anything. That's it.
Right.
Plug something in, and I'm good now. So I very much like the PC. I think it's better, and I've been straying a lot from like my PlayStation. Like, I think this is the first time where I'm sitting here like, I don't think I'm going to buy the new PlayStation. I've gotten every single PlayStation since the PS1, and there's no reason for me to buy the PS5. The only thing the PS5 has over me is any console exclusives, and that's it. Because when you think about it, why should I get this game on my PS4 when it's capped at X frames, it has these loading times, I have to do XYZ, when I could just get it on the PC, run it at the max settings, have barely any load times, and there's more options.
Yeah.
So right now the PS4 is just, it's sitting out in my garage and it's just kind of there.
Oh, wow.
I know, it's quite sad, but that's just what happens.
Yeah.
It's just prevents me from playing console-specific games.
Right.
So, but yeah, I think it's the first time I won't buy a new console, which is insane. But the difference, though, like, that compared to the Switch is different, though, because you can't get Nintendo games, unless it's older and you emulate it, you can't get Nintendo games on a PC. But a lot of the games that come out on, like, PS4 or Xbox, they're on Steam or whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, I can't buy the newest Mario game on Steam. That doesn't exist. And then, like I said, the issue with Nintendo is the Switch is just such a good console because of its games and its ability to, like, move around that it's justified for me to get it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's enough games that I want to play that I can't get on PC, and it works really well, and it's just a decent console. Like, there'll be times, like, I'll be on my PC playing with friends, and maybe we're loading, or I died in a round, and I'll just pull my Switch out and just be playing it, because that's what I can do. Hey, if I've died and I have to wait 5 minutes because they're taking forever, I'm just going to play something else and wait.
Oh my.
But yeah, it's PC is definitely I'm very much leaned into it because it's just better for me.
So what are some video games that you would suggest to our listeners or me or your friends?
All right, so if we're going to go with, like, I've never seen a video game in my life, what is a video game? I would say primarily you want to stick to Nintendo.
Okay.
Because Nintendo is very family-friendly, and in my eyes, very beginner, easy to go. So I know everybody, you see Mario all over, but Mario games are pretty basic, easy to get games. There's not much to it. Maybe a Pokemon if you're a little bit more into it, but it's a basic concept game. It's easy to get into, and it's fun. It's nice. You could always do like a party game. Those are easy to get into as well, like a Jackbox or Mario Party, Mario Kart. If you didn't want to do that route, Minecraft is a great game. because Minecraft is a very simple concept, and it's not hard. And that's one of those, there aren't any rules. Do what you want. So you can't really lose. So you don't have to feel pressured into not being able to beat the game, because it's, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
So if I had to say, pick a game for somebody who's never played a game, I'm pointing them, go play Minecraft. Minecraft is a great starting game, because you can play with friends. You can even say, I don't want to play on the normal version. I just want to go in creative mode and place blocks. Well, there you go. It's simple, and you just place blocks. So that would be my recommendation. And then I would move on to go check Nintendo stuff out. Nintendo stuff is very family-friendly, very easy, very chill.
Yep.
And then definitely just branch out. Just look at stuff. You know, like, there's anywhere from first-person shooting games that are very competitive and require, like, split-second time thinking to party games, to puzzles, to games with amazing just stories that it's like reading a whole book, essentially. It's all sorts of stuff, and it's just look at stuff. Just look at what there is. Just, if you think you have an interest, maybe jump into it. That's why, like, Twitch is such a good thing and why live streaming is great, or Let's Plays on YouTube, because you don't have to buy the game. You can watch somebody play it, and then you can decide. So say you heard people talk about this game, League of Legends, which everybody talked about because it's popular. Well, I don't know what that is. I'm just going to go watch it. Granted, it's going to make any sense to you because it's a very complex game, but at least you can see what it is before deciding if you want to jump into it. And you can do that with anything. And it's a good way to just go, okay, well, that looks cool. I want to try that. Or, oh, hey. You could always ask friends too. Like, friends could give you recommendations. But yeah, start with Minecraft. That's my suggestion. And then just look around, see what there is. And then most games usually have tutorials. So for the love of God, read the tutorial prompts on the screen and follow the tutorial. Because there's people that'll be like, I don't know how to do this thing. And I'm like, well, it told you what to do very clearly. Maybe if you just read the text.
Read the directions.
It literally told you how to jump. Don't ask me what button the jump button is. So.
Nice. Nice. I think those are all really great suggestions. Yeah, really good for people to get into.
Just ask around. Ask around, look around, watch stuff. There's so much stuff out there that you don't have to buy anything without knowing about it first.
Yeah.
So, and then maybe if you just don't even want to get that far into it, the whole mobile game scene is just, it's very accessible. Everybody's got a phone. And mobile games are typically very easy.
Yeah.
I would watch out, because there are some that are very addictive and try and get you to spend money. They're called gacha games, and they're literally called that for a reason.
Do not spend money on mobile games. Don't do it. It's just so unnecessary.
That's it. Definitely watch that. But there are some that are just very chill. Like, you don't have to think much. It's just, maybe just get like a Sudoku for your phone.
And
it's
like, okay.
So it's stuff like that. There's definitely a lot of free stuff out there, but then there's stuff that's very much, oh, well, you're very enjoying this game, right? Oh, you love this game. Oh, okay. Well, now you have to give us money because you can't progress this game effectively unless you give us money. And you're like, ooh.
Yeah. But
again, nothing's perfect. I would not jump into mobile games right away, though. That's called have a sense of self-control and know what you're doing.
So where can people find you if they want to talk video games with you or ask you about building a computer?
The places you can really find me is I've got a Twitch channel. So I tend to go by the same name. I go by NeoQuester online. I'm not very stable there at the moment because I'm focusing on life, but like once I finally move on out, I think I'm going to get a more steady schedule, and I'll probably do more of my speedrunning stuff there. I also like to, you know, mess around with a bit of 3D printing and cosplay stuff, and I have an Instagram, which I'll also link that. That has a different name. It's under Quester Cosplay. That's about all I really am on for wanting to show people. Everything else is either private or I don't use. It just kind of exists.
Right.
But definitely drop that by. And hey, definitely come say hi. I I like talking when I'm live streaming to people. I don't like just staring at the screen wondering what the hell's going on. So, yeah. That's where you can find me.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, Nick, I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast with me. I love the topic that we're talking about, and I knew that you would be the perfect person to talk video games with.
Yeah, well, no problem. I'm always here if you want to talk more.
And definitely reach out to him about anything relating to video games, building a computer, or anything about consoles. He's really great to talk to, and he's generally very open about talking about that stuff.
Oh, such kind words. I should put you on a reference for my resume.
I will say, you wouldn't be the first. I've had a great amount of people that have.
Talk me up to employers. Let's go.
I'm the best at doing it.
Thank you all so much for listening to my very first podcast. Let's Talk Fandoms is produced by Tazita Gant, created by Tazita Gant, edited by Tazita Gant, hosted by Tazita Gant, cover art done by Psych A Relic on Instagram, intro music done by Riri Retro, also on Instagram. You can find all of their links in the description of this podcast on each episode. Remember to keep talking fandoms with us, along with everyone else you know. You can find Let's Talk Fandoms podcast on Instagram and Fandoms Podcast on Twitter.